I'm Ari Redford, and this is TRM Talks. I am Global Head of Policy at TRM Labs. At TRM, we provide blockchain intelligence software to support law enforcement investigations and to help financial institutions and cryptocurrency businesses mitigate financial crime risk within the emerging digital asset economy. Prior to joining TRM, I spent 15 years in the U.S. federal government, first as a prosecutor at the Department of Justice, and then as a Treasury Department official, where I worked to safeguard the financial system against terrorist financiers, weapons of mass destruction proliferators, drug kingpins, and other rogue actors. On TRM Talks, I sit down with business leaders, policymakers, investigators, and friends from across the crypto ecosystem who are working to build a safer financial system. Today, we have a very special breaking news TRM Talks. I sit down with Todd Conklin, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Cyber and Chief AI Officer at the U.S. Department of Treasury, on a brand new report titled Managing Artificial Intelligence Risk in the Financial Services Sector. But first, inside the lab, where I share data-driven insights from our blockchain intelligence team. According to a recent report by TRM's blockchain intelligence team, North Korea stole approximately $700 million in cryptocurrency in 2023. While that is a significant decrease from 2022 hauls, the bottom line is that North Korea continues to attack the crypto ecosystem at unprecedented speed and scale. In fact, North Korea has stolen about $3 billion worth of cryptocurrency since 2017, and over $1.5 billion in the last 2 years alone. The report also highlights North Korea's evolving laundering tactics. After the U.S. Treasury Department and Department of Justice took action against Mixer Tornado Cash, we saw DPRK actors move to Sinbad. Once Sinbad was sanctioned, we have seen North Korea move to Yomix and other mixing services to launder funds. The report is a must-read that really dives into the way North Korea steals and launders funds. So how do we mitigate the risk? First and foremost, we need to bolster cybersecurity. According to the report, North Korea continues to focus on infrastructure hacks, stealing private keys and seed phrases through phishing and other social engineering. This means that education is critical. In addition, from large exchanges to small DeFi protocols, we need to ensure that cybersecurity is foundational infrastructure. Second, we need to keep funds on chain. Brian Nelson, Treasury's Undersecretary for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence, recently said, quote, "North Korea has virtual currency, but can't buy anything with it. It's just kind of stuck. So we're trying to keep it stuck. Investigators, law enforcement, and national security agencies are becoming better using more and more sophisticated tools like TRM to trace the funds, and compliance teams are becoming better at compliance. In other words, stopping North Korea and other cyber criminals from off-ramping the funds, from converting them from cryptocurrencies to more traditional currencies to use them. The key is to stop North Korea at the off-ramps. Hacks and exploits are going to continue to be a big issue. We are seeing Bitcoin hit record highs and $100 billion locked in decentralized finance. That means criminals like North Korea will continue to focus on where the money is. As the ecosystem grows, we need to work together to keep it safe." All right, now let's sit down with Treasury's Todd Conklin to discuss the report, Managing Artificial Intelligence Risk in the Financial Services Sector. Todd, thank you so much for joining me. You are, I think now, like maybe one of our most prolific TRM Talks guests, which is a huge honor because you have amazing expertise to offer.
Appreciate it. As long as I pass Mike Mosier, I'm okay with that.
Mike, you and Mike and Carol House are, I think, battling for that. Maybe that top spot. Look, Treasury has a brand new report on managing artificial intelligence risk in the financial services sector, and really excited to sort of dig into that report. But really, before we do, would love to hear a little bit about sort of your personal journey.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks, Ari. It's always a pleasure to be spending deep time with you to discuss our favorite topics here. I know you had a really close seat to some of the work we were trying to do at the department in terms of bringing a big data and new technology mindset to the department, going back, gosh, it must have been 7 years or so that I think that you and I were working on trying to revision how Treasury potentially could be leveraging data analytics generally to support investigations. And now to me, that's a culmination of my varied career path. I started working at ExxonMobil Corporation over 20 years ago in the risk management side of the house. And then I went totally deep, kind of like you, into the law enforcement world, where I joined Secret Service, did counterfeit access device fraud investigations, and then fell in love with the Treasury mission, especially the sanctions mission, and joined OFAC. That was really like a little engine that could. It was this really small agency that almost nobody heard of that had tremendous power and influence. At OFAC, I at one point led the sanctions targeting group, which had a significant number of personnel, and at the time was using a very traditional style of investigation, right, of collecting data, having access to subscription sources that were kind of one-offs that the investigator would go onto the subscription site, pull down whatever they needed to, and then, you know, collate data against what they were seeing on their systems. And we were missing the power of true analytics with our program. So I really tried to present a somewhat of a new model in terms of bringing together all of those subscription sources into one data lake construct, and then beginning to bounce that off of Treasury data assets as well, and then putting some analytics tools on top of that. We referenced this in the AI report that we released today. That became what we call now is the CASH program.
I do uniquely sort of remember this moment and you really leading this charge at Treasury. I don't think people realize that there are folks like you in the U.S. federal government who are harnessing the power of data at government institutions like the U.S. Treasury Department. I uniquely remember you being tapped to sort of lead this data project, Chief Data Officer for the Office of Terrorism and Financial Intelligence, which was around, I believe, 2019-ish. And I remember being in meetings with you and Secretary Mnuchin, where you are, you know, really telling him about or explain to him the real possibilities that we have at the U.S. Treasury Department to leverage this type of data. Would you just sort of share a little bit about that moment?
Yeah, fantastic. And really, it comes down to a discussion of our tech stack and what we wanted that to look like at the department. At that moment in time, there was a great debate going on around what should the use of cloud within financial institutions, which within government, and how do we take advantage of this technology in a responsible way? There was a lot of questions about whether or not we should even be using cloud at that time, right? And I think that was a lot of what Secretary Mnuchin's, him having the background of a CIO at a major bank, you know, in the pre-cloud days, he had a lot of very great questions around, you know, maybe why we shouldn't be going that direction. But ultimately, for us to stay competitive, we needed the scalability and compute power. Some organizations can build this in-house, but they're few and far between. But to get to that level of elasticity, we needed to outsource some of our infrastructure pieces to drive our analytics program. And I think people understood that message, right? And then the question on that is, can we do it securely? And can we do it in a legally compliant way that is appropriate for the type of data that Treasury collects? And that's where the program quickly turned into a risk management program. And I think we were even on the first board we stood up, which was really a legal board, to understand what data assets is Treasury trying to leverage here, and what are the use restrictions, what are the storage restrictions, right? And the reason I'm bringing all this up in detail, or all the work that you helped us do and everyone's been working on at Treasury for the better part of 8 years, is these are the recommendations we're making in this AI study for how firms should be integrating AI right now. It fundamentally comes down to securing your data. And the reason it's important for AI systems is there is an elevated risk when you're talking about the potential for things like data poisoning, for data leakage, for data integrity attacks. It is more acute and riskier for AI systems than traditional systems. So you have to really make sure you're nailing down your foundational pieces in your data space. AI really, to me, in my world, maybe this is simplistic, but it's a combination of availability and access to large quantities of data and meeting the scalability and compute power that's being offered by existing technology right now, which we never had available at this level, at this scale, in a cost-effective way, until relatively recently, some governments. And it was a really exciting time.
Let's dig into the report a little bit. Honestly, you said to me a few minutes ago when we were speaking privately that you feel like this report is actually the fruits of a lot of the work that have been done over the last several years.
Right. Yeah. And I think what we want to caution is, you know, that sky is falling, that, you know, it's very much a new issue for a lot of people and is being sensationalized in the media. But we wanted to leverage this report as a baseline to say, like, look, this has been thought about very deeply for the better part of several years now. And it's great that it's been raised in the agenda and the narrative across the board. But we also need to realize that a lot of thought and work has been done. So let's document what that looks like. And that's true, too, of the financial sector broadly. And the reason why we wanted to scope this report to cybersecurity and fraud issues to start with is the broader financial sector has been leveraging AI tools for cyber and fraud, in particular, for the better part of a decade. And that's, we want to use this report as an opportunity to get all that on one page and make it clear in a crystal clear way. Here's the best practices as we've seen them deployed across the sector, as we deployed them internal to Treasury. And yes, there's gap areas that we have to work on collectively. Let's be transparent and list those, which we do at the end of the report, and then also work on those in the coming years. So I'm pretty excited.
Why Treasury? Like, why is Treasury as deep as it is on technology, on data, on cyber? And why do you have the role that you have, essentially?
Yeah, great question. Yeah, why do we even need a chief AI officer? Yeah, fantastic question. I know you know this. I think people would be surprised to know that Treasury effectively operates as a bank for the U.S. government. We just put out a press release highlighting that group's work over the last few months. They've deployed new AI tools to reduce fraud by over $300 million over the last few months. And that's expenditures that were going out from that bureau, from that bank-like apparatus that Treasury has, right? So we're an operator in the space, right? And so part of my initial job going back a month ago was to begin the process of cataloging all of the existing use cases that Treasury has, AI use cases that the department has, and then seeing if there's areas where we need to expand. And we have nearly 100 use cases at the department currently. Some are very mature. Some are projects that we're just trying to fund. So we're extremely active from a technological standpoint. The other half of my job is being responsible for sector risk management support to the financial sector. The financial sector often looks to Treasury as sector risk management to provide intelligence support and to provide kind of a look down the horizon from an analytical level. We're able to see what all of the firms in total are doing. We start all of these studies by interviewing as many firms that want to speak with us on these issues to understand where they are in their current state of adoption and what challenges they're having. So for this study, we started in December by doing up to 2-hour in-depth interviews with 42 financial institutions and tech firms to really understand what's the state of play here in the financial sector. And then we started to focus on, okay, but where are they starting to expand to? And as they expand, there are some things that, you know, they're actually in a consistent way thinking through, but here's what that looks like, and here's what they're thinking through right now. But the one kind of dramatic statement that we have early in the report is that there is not one consistent definition for what AI even means for the sector. And frankly, even across the Treasury bureaus, right? So just defining AI and defining your AI strategy is proving to be a bit of a challenge. And some of the firms wanted to talk about generative AI, others wanted to talk about large language models, right? So there's a basic lexicon gap that we collectively have that I think Treasury can play a central role in making sure we close that.
I love that example. And I think it's a huge issue in emerging technology across the board. You and I sit together on the CFTC Technology Advisory Committee, and we just put out this report on DeFi, and frankly, couldn't come to a definition. I've heard great definitions out there, but I think frankly, we ultimately punted and said, hey, we'll deal with other issues, but centralization, decentralization is hard. AI is another one, but it's almost like, all right, let's at least try to regulate or come up with solutions on a spectrum of some kind. And I think that's what you did in large part in this report.
Yeah, and why that's critical for the financial sector. So Treasury's other role is that we lead what's called the FIFIC. I won't do the whole alphabet soup, but that's where all the federal financial regulators get together to work through these issues and think about these issues, and eventually policy gets developed. Our financial institution is highly regulated, and it's important that we align around a definition for the financial sector. Otherwise, there'll be confusion in terms of what's being flagged in the regulations and oversight examinations, right? So that's a basic thing that we have to resolve in the financial sector because of the regulatory aspect.
Give me the TLDR, right? What should people have to know about this report that's dropping today?
To me, the biggest takeaway, and this is something that really was illuminated during the interview process, was there's a significant gap right now between our largest financial institutions and our smallest financial institutions, which isn't abnormal, and frankly wasn't abnormal in the cloud discussion either. But why it's challenging, and particularly more acute in the AI discussion, is adversaries are already leveraging these tools for fraud activities, for cyber activities. So the adversary landscape has a little bit of a slight advantage right now in that they're taking advantage of these tools as they're in development phases, where banks, obviously, because of the regulatory aspect, have to be a little bit more judicious in how they sometimes adopt or absorb these tools. In the case of smaller financial institutions, not only do they not have necessarily the tech capacity to do this, they don't generate enough of their own internal data, especially in the fraud space, to even do their own modeling, right? So that's a fundamental new gap that we have that's in the AI space. And you contrast that with our largest institutions, which are already leveraging AI tools for the better part of a decade to map fraud. And they've been able to, you know, markedly decrease fraud activity, in some cases, you know, over 50% by some estimates. So on that trajectory, it's a difficult spot to put our smaller institutions in. They are not taking advantage of the potential tools that are available by the advances in AI. So that's really our biggest next step area is how do we help our smaller institutions close the data gap they have, right? And I think there's a role to play for Treasury. There's a role to play for other financial institutions. There's a role to play for core providers. There's a role to play for you guys, Ari, CRM. And the cybersecurity world is treated a bit as a team sport, where government readily downgrades and shares intelligence information with the sector. The sector has bodies where they share information amongst themselves. There's firms like CrowdStrike that absorb the cybersecurity telemetry data from firms and then help use that to protect other firms. So there's a lot happening that's more of a team mindset with the cybersecurity space. In the fraud space, though, historically, that's been very siloed within organizations. And I think that's a big gap and miss from the data perspective. A lot of those same cyber signatures are going to be apparent and maybe point you to the fraudsters. But there's also this mantra almost out there that my fraud operation, I just need to be better than the next guy and let them get targeted. If we're going to actually make a serious run at fixing this data gap for the smaller institutions and the broader ecosystem, we're going to have to really change our mindset for how we approach fraud across the sector.
So what does that look like as a practical matter?
From a data perspective, how we've tried to fashion that the department is try to pull together the cybersecurity data with the fraud data, with a lot of the open source data. It's going to be the same thread. From a data perspective, there's an advantage to starting the company. There's data that you can't obviously all put into that pool, and it has to be scope for a method, but there's a certain amount of data that if you thread all those activities together, you're going to be successful. In the case of scaling it across the sector, we have to kind of grow out some sort of central nodes, right? So maybe it's fraud ISACs, maybe it's core providers within the financial sector, right? We have to start this mindset of pulling together the vast dollars that we have independently together to support one another in the fraud space. Since the pandemic, it's just an exploding problem for the sector. We have to rethink the model on it. And so American Bankers Association right now has been tapped to help these members, and we're going to try to partner with them.
I think one of the things you do really well in this report, and that is it's here are the risks, but here are also the opportunities from a technology standpoint that helps us mitigate some of these risks. So let's dig into some of the risks, specifically. There's two categories, as I see it, sort of throughout this report, and that is the cyber risk, how AI-enabled cyber risk and AI-enabled fraud risk to a large degree. And then we could talk about the way you are recommending that institutions sort of mitigate some of these risks, also using technology. But let's talk cyber first. What are sort of the key cyber risks that you kind of spell out in the report?
We asked every single firm that we spoke with, what do you see as new here? Like, what are you experiencing on the ground that's a challenge for you from a cyber perspective and a fraud perspective? And frankly, what we heard was a lot of older tactics just at a greater scale. There's an obvious increase in email phishing and the precision of email phishing, emails and verbiage in the emails. And that's obviously because they're leveraging the translation tools to really sharpen their emails. So kind of gone are the days where you got this like, hodgepodge gibberish email from someone, across the world that you could easily spot was, a fraudster because they English was so broken, right? So you've seen that, but to me, that's not a new risk, right? Where I would consider it to be new, and this then dovetails across both the cyber and fraud space, it's really in the identity impersonation and synthetic identity spaces. And that's where we have the most profound new risk. And we're starting to collect some anecdotes from institutions about those already being leveraged in new ways to target customers.
To get to those anecdotes a bit, what are examples of that type of activity that financial institutions are seeing?
Right now, we're seeing this on occasion in the high-value asset customer grouping, especially. Logically, these are people who probably have a public profile, potentially. It's easy to collect data or images or audio.
I'm in a lot of trouble, Todd. I'm in a lot of trouble is what you're telling me. All right.
Yeah, you're everywhere. Yeah, people can easily mimic you. And where that becomes a challenge is for those high value asset customers, sometimes, not all the times, but sometimes financial institutions try to create a little bit more of a frictionless experience for them, right? That those customers occasionally are used to being able to call into the bank and they have that rep that they always deal with or have a video chat with that bank. That's where it's most susceptible right now. But to my point earlier, there are tools to mitigate this. It's just you have to ensure that you're adjusting your risk model from a financial institution perspective to make sure those remain on, right? And then the other aspect of what's new here, for a long time, you heard a lot about patching, right? Which is a whole other bucket of things. But then you heard a lot about multi-factor authentication. You know, actually, it goes like 3-4 years ago. That's all you were hearing from the government was like, patch your computers and use role-based time growth adaptation, right? So NIST updating your guidance on all the network, that's not strong enough anymore because of these tools. So that's something that we covered in great detail in the report. There are additional mitigations that firms and users really should be thinking about in adjusting the risk management policies and frameworks.
I do feel like there's a lot of intersection overlap between the fraud and the cyber piece. But if we were to separate them slightly, how are fraudsters in particular taking advantage of AI and new technologies?
Yeah, it's really in the high value asset customer base. It's to even find the customers, right? And to figure out what banks they're likely using and to then actually develop either a video or an audio feed that would enable them to get into the account. So it's really an extension of, you know, that counterintelligence world that we used to always be so afraid of. Now there's readily available tools that I feel like almost nation states just only have really the ability to kind of really leverage that are available at a larger scale.
What you're getting to here is the level of sophistication. A couple of years ago, we were talking about phishing by adversaries as sophisticated as North Korea, casting that wide net. And now it feels more and more targeted just based on the ability to use technology, even at specific individuals.
That's exactly it. Maybe we could talk a little bit about, you know, what a role like a TRM could play here.
Yeah, no, that would be fantastic. I was actually going to ask along those lines. When I got to TRM, I immediately reached out to you in this role, given that we are a data analytics company, right? We are building an enormous database of cryptocurrency addresses layered with threat intelligence. So we had these really cool conversations about how you can leverage private sector technology and information as well. So we'd love to kind of hear your thoughts on that and dovetail into the report.
I think I was kind of an early adopter of TRM. I think I actually reached out to Esteban. I looked at my LinkedIn. I think it was like 2018.
Amazing.
Which I think was close to when you guys were founded.
And
I think it was like 2 or 3 employees at the time. And the reason I was really interested in meeting with Esteban, he had a really great idea. And he talked about like the shape of fraud, which I think is so critical now to mitigating a lot of the risks and the elevated risks that we just discussed. And what she was honing in on was something that the cybersecurity community and world had been leveraging for the better part of a decade, you know, behavioral analytics to defend infrastructure and networks. And that had been brought into the fraud world up until that time, right? So he was really right on in terms of that transfer of ideology into the fraud space. I could see very quickly that you guys were going to be able to get traction, innovate quickly. We had partnered with Pacific Northwest National Labs, and you remember all this, Sarah, but through that partnership, we brought TRM in as one of our strategic advisors very early on for that, what became the cash fund. We had that same ideological mindset of leveraging big data to combat criminal and fraud activity. And the piece that we really needed help with, that both you and Chain Analysis helped us out with, was then extending our data ontology that we have for our AML and sanctions work into the crypto space, which we knew was going to be hitting us really hard in the coming years. That's something where we really saw kind of a strategic allies with you all. So where do you guys were trying to position yourselves?
Really appreciate that. I think, and it's a testament to you, really, the federal government is not famous for folks with an entrepreneurial spirit to sort of reach out to the private sector, bring them in, put together partnerships that can really sort of move the ball forward. And I think the Treasury at this point is kind of leading the charge in large part because of a lot of the work that you did back then. And this report today is really the culmination of years and years of work around this. One thing I just want to focus on real quick is that sort of moment in time that you're describing, particularly around crypto. And I know we're going to be a little off the report on this, but you really spearheaded a lot of the work that has been done over the last few years around targeting what you actually called, and I quote you all the time, targeting the illicit underbelly of the really overwhelmingly lawful crypto ecosystem. But I think that's been Treasury's playbook the last few years, and you had a large role in writing that playbook. Talk me through sort of your role in that and like any sort of reflections on what I think is still an ongoing battle to a large extent, but there was sort of a moment in time where you were really doing this for the first time.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. We had a very similar approach to both the cloud and AI reports as we had to our counter-ransomware strategy, right? Which is really tech neutral. We don't try to position ourselves to favor one technology over another, right? And blockchain is in that bucket, just as cloud is in that bucket, just as various AI systems are in that bucket. What we try to tell people, though, is that there's a foundational risk management approach to all of this that has to be implemented if you want to participate in the broader financial sector. And I think there were people and companies and entities in the crypto community that had a lot of influence and power who just didn't necessarily want to participate in that way. At the department, we want to be very careful and not come down one way or the other and just call it as we saw it, right? When we saw bad actors using the system, we were going to target them. When we saw good things happening in the system, we should highlight that and praise U.S. technology firms and ingenuity. And I think that's how I've tried to approach the sector expander role. I've tried to approach the cloud report, the AI report in that same way, and really trying to give people flexibility within that. And that's what you, when you saw some of the updated things and the NOFAC guidance that came out, gosh, I think what was this, 2021, at the start of the Biden administration, really when we try to revamp and adjust and incorporate some of our policy approaches here. We tried to make that balance and make it clear. And also at CoinDesk in Texas, really making it clear, here's what we're doing. We're not out to get anyone here. We just need a baseline level of risk management applied to everything that enters the financial sector. And if you don't do that, we're going to come after you. If you do that, we're going to try to elevate you and lift you up. And I try to do that with the cloud providers. I try to do that with all the AI companies. There's a lot of really cool innovation coming out of like the AI token space right now. And that's kind of fun that we should be watching it and elevating it. I think, you know, again, maybe I shouldn't mention specific companies or names, but yeah, maybe one that comes to mind is Asana. You know, Asana's focus, I'm not familiar folks are with, I think it's relatively new, but it's really trying to combat the challenge of availability of compute power and using the combination of blockchain and AI tools to really solve for availability and access to cheap technology scalability while also avoiding vendor lock-in. Like that's a really significant challenge that people face and firms face. So I love to see that innovation.
What would you say to financial institutions here? And I'm talking like from small potential DeFi protocols to traditional financial institutions to cryptocurrency exchanges and really across the board. First and foremost, read this thing. There's so much in here. I have been poring over it the last couple of days. But like really key takeaways for financial institutions on here.
It's really ensuring that there's one responsible party that's managing all of your AI. Somewhere in your organization, someone's senior enough and cut across all of the verticals to make sure that they're keeping on top of all the use cases. And then follow the basic risk management principles that the financial sector has laid out now, which is risk management frameworks. Leverage the NIST risk management framework. We're going to do an update that's coming out. Make sure it extends to your organization. Your third-party risk management program. Make sure that's tightened up and extended to allow for AI. Your data risk management program. Make sure that's tightened up. There are artifacts out there that exist. Just make sure one person in your organization is threading them together, thinking about them, and then also applying the basic cybersecurity controls to this problem that should apply to the rest of your tech stack.
You are the chief data officer, the AI guy, the cyber guy at one of the most important financial regulators in the world. Do you use data in your personal life? Are you one of these guys who wears the ring that, like, you know, you can decide how much to sleep or drink or anything? Or is this church and state here? We've gotten to the world where, from an individual standpoint, you can monitor so many aspects of your life and hopefully, like a compliance officer, build on it, improve on it, create safeguards in your own life that can help you stay healthy, stay happy, and all that good stuff.
To me, like, you have to be at this point. And where I use it the most, maybe this is too personal, where I use it the most is financial investments. You know, kind of like quasi, like, you know, stock trackers, things like that. And it's, you know, fun stuff. So it's more like a hobby, a career for me.
I love it. You cannot be too personal on TRM Talks, Todd, so we're good. Awesome. But in all seriousness, thank you. Tremendous report. Encourage everyone out there to read it, to really have it as a resource, which is how I see it as well. Best practices, really things to kind of think about. Thank you for, you know, dropping it on TRM Talks with us. And yeah, really looking forward to the next conversation.
Yeah, thank you. Really appreciate it. Always a pleasure.
I'm often asked about where does AI and cyber and cryptocurrency intersect? When I think about emerging technology, I think of all three. And I think of all three together. Look, we've seen attacks on the crypto ecosystem, hacks against cryptocurrency businesses from DeFi protocols to bridges to centralized exchanges over the last couple of years by all kinds of cyber actors. TRM tracks and traces the flow of funds that were hacked or stolen from that exchange, hopefully being able to help investigators investigate those attacks and ultimately seize them back. But the reality is the key to stopping cyber breaches is to stop them from happening in the first place. And that really means cyber hygiene. That means hardening cyber controls at cryptocurrency services and businesses across the globe. And finally, the sort of promise of the technology, as Todd said, I thought so eloquently, look, we should also be focused on the promise as much as we're focused on the risks. We're using AI and machine learning and data science today in tools like TRM, right? We're trying to understand, as Todd said, patterns of fraud and financial crime. We are building out a larger and larger database of cryptocurrency addresses using sophisticated machine learning algorithms in order to extrapolate from those attributed cryptocurrency addresses. So we should all be leveraging the power of this technology, but also ensure that we're mitigating the risks that could potentially come with it. Next on TRM Talks, I am joined by threat intelligence expert, Jessica Davis. Thanks to all of you for joining TRM Talks today and for helping us build a safer financial system. If you love the show, leave a review wherever you're listening to it. For more crypto insights, you can also subscribe to the TRM Weekly Roundup at trmlabs.com.
TRM Talks is brought to you by TRM Labs, the leading provider of blockchain intelligence and anti-money laundering software. This episode was produced in partnership with Voltage Productions. The music for this show was provided by Ecolix.
Now, let's get back to building.